AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. Were you guys as nervous about checking the markets last night as I was? I mean, I'd like to think I'm not the only one a bit nervous about what's happening around the world. The Freedom Convoy continues. The House passed the Competes Act. Biden administration is talking trade with China, and inflation is at a 40-year high. We got a lot to cover on the Free For All.
Live from the home stretch via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning, it's a Friday Free-For-Ho. Panelists Randy Russell, Mark Recker, and me, Davis Michelson. Right after the news, Jennifer Scheich from Farm Journal's Pork. I am handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Yes, now here's the host of AgriTalk, Chip Mallory.
All right, Davis.
Hey, buddy.
Fantastic. Yes, we all like that one. We all appreciate that one. Welcome, everyone.
Treat for Friday. Welcome, welcome indeed.
Yes, we are glad that you are with us on this Friday morning. It's 36 degrees and windy as heck, and the wind's coming from the wrong direction, and it's going to get cold, cold, cold for the weekend, dude.
Could get a little sketchy. I was thinking that after work today, this evening, that I might – I was thinking it might be fun to go to a movie.
Ooh.
Go to the theater with popcorn.
What are you thinking? Have you got one in mind?
Well, there's a new one coming out about robots sort of taking over. I'm into sci-fi. I read a lot of sci-fi books. It's my preferred genre for reading.
Yeah.
But I see Dune is still playing. I haven't seen that. But I don't know if it's going to be sketchy and windy and cold, and I might just stay right where I am right now.
Staying in is a good decision on that. I'm telling you. So we've got Jennifer Scheich coming up here at the end of the first – segment.
Yeah.
I just want to tell you my plans. We've got a Iowa State women's basketball game to watch at 1 o'clock tomorrow afternoon. The men follow right up after 3 o'clock. The only thing that concerns me about that kind of a basketball schedule is when am I going to get the smoking done that I need to get done for the game on Sunday? That's my big
commercials
concern for this weekend.
There'll be commercials, right?
Well, I hope so. And by smoking, I mean I've got chicken wings to do. I've got ribs to do. It's a big weekend, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Lots to manage. Lots to manage.
I didn't know what you were thinking when I said I've got smoking. How am I going to get my – I don't know if you went to the same place
I
did.
I was thinking trout. You'll be smoking some trout, right?
Right, right.
Perhaps a salmon.
Right. Mm-hmm. Let's get to the news.
Well, the Kremlin is tightening its military vise on Ukraine as thousands of Russian troops yesterday began 10 days of exercises in Belarus. Ukraine also warned of upcoming Russian naval drills so extensive they would block shipping lanes. Aside from Belarus, satellite images revealed deployments of Russian military equipment and troops in Crimea and Western Russia. This according to the New York Times. Now in Moscow, Sergei Lavrov, the Russian foreign minister, dismissed his talks with his British counterpart as a conversation of a, quote, mute person with a deaf person, asserting again that the West was not seriously addressing Russia's most pressing concerns. Dude. It got a little rocky there with the British counterpart, sounds like.
I get it, but all I can see is Kevin Bacon saying, nothing to see here, move on, nothing to see. These drills are going to be so extensive that they may block shipping lanes. Not that we're actually blocking shipping lanes.
Oh, right.
Not that
right.
we're actually into military maneuvers. This is all still just a drill. Nothing to see here. Keep moving.
Mm-hmm. When you impact trade movements.
They could be telling us straight out that it's happening.
Yes. Yes. That's the thing.
Yes.
Moving on. Goldman Sachs economists now expect the Federal Reserve, get this, Chip, to raise interest rates 7 times this year to contain surging U.S. inflation, up from the 5 hikes they had seen earlier. The change of view comes after the consumer price index in the U.S. for January showed a 7.5% annual increase, the biggest since 1982. Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis President James Bullard said he supports raising interest rates by a full percentage point by the start of July in response to the hottest inflation in 4 decades. Chip.
Lots of flashbacks going on here. Now I've got the lion from the cartoons. You know, how many lumps do you need? Oh, 3 or 4.
Oh, 3 bang, bang, or bang, 4.
Bang him on the head. Yeah. How many interest rates do you need? Oh, I don't know. 3 or 4.
Five or seven.
Five or seven. One of them might be a half point. Two of them could be a half point. Interest rates needs managing. The inflation rate needs managing. And as of right now, nothing's been done other than talk.
Well, speaking of nothing has been done, the Supreme Court has not yet indicated whether they will take up the requested petition for review of California's controversial Proposition 12 made by Farm Bureau and the NPPC. If the Supreme Court does not accept the petition for the review, there would be major and negative impacts for the U.S. ag sector ahead, as more anti-ag groups would likely take a similar approach on other issues. The Canadian province of Alberta has filed a trade challenge seeking to recoup its investment in the Keystone XL pipeline project that was canceled by the Biden administration. This is the second claim to be filed under legacy provisions of the North American Free Trade Agreement, now USMCA. TC Energy filed a similar claim last year seeking more than $15 billion in damages.
Wow.
Go on.
Just real quickly on that, if they're looking for ways to bring down energy prices with the crude oil contract, March contract, 91.66, let's just start making more. Let's start producing more. And the Keystone XL would be a great way to move it around the country.
Yes. Well, China says it has worked hard to promote the joint implementation of its Phase 1 economic and trade agreement with the U.S. despite multiple negative impacts of the COVID-19 pandemic. And talks there don't seem to be going well either. Chip.
Right. All right, Davis. Thank you so much. We need to get to this conversation with Jennifer Scheich from Farm Journal's Pork. Good morning, Jennifer.
Good morning. How are you?
Good, good, good. So you went up to the Ohio Pork Congress. What'd you learn?
Oh, it was a great event. That was my first time to go, and I was super impressed. There were about 400 pig farmers there from Ohio, and I guess also, you know, allied industry as well. But, man, the aisles were packed with a lot of great conversations taking place. So it was definitely a great opportunity. Man, there were so many things that we talked about. You know, there was definitely a focus on labor that we heard. Listened to some great speakers talk about ways to keep employees. And also how to think a little bit differently about the millennial generation and how to meet them where they're at instead of trying to, you know, talk about why they're not as good as our generation ahead of them were.
Right.
And I thought that was pretty funny as a Gen Xer. But, you know, it was some really good points about, you know, the differences between like vacation packages and some things like that. Also big focus on taking care of sows. And how we need to, you know, what we need to do to better care for those sows so that we drop those sow mortality numbers. Mm-hmm. Let's see.
Yeah.
The meetings
that are happening now, the conversation list is long. There is no question about it. And we had the conversation earlier this week with Dr. Michael from Iowa State University Vet Lab talking about animal diseases. That had to be a topic as well.
Oh, absolutely. And one of the things I thought was a great point that was brought up was this next FAD preparedness step that our industry is taking with the U.S. Swine Health Improvement Plan. And Dr. Rademacher from Iowa State talked about why producers need to get involved in that and some things that they could do to protect their herds.
Very cool. Very cool. Real quick, what you got going on the grill for the game this weekend?
You know, I'm going to be spending the day at a wrestling tournament, so I might be doing some easier things like bacon-wrapped weenies that I can throw together pretty fast. And there's
Excellent.
A really good chip dip recipe on porkbusiness.com.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
Find farm equipment on Machine Repeats February 22nd online auction. No reserve, no buyer fees. Start bidding now. Auctions.machinerypeat.com. Chip.
Yes, Davis?
Fair to say you put your pants on one leg at a time?
It is. It is. I used to try doing them both at one time, you know, jumping in the air. But, yeah, no, that really doesn't work out for me.
See, the difference is between you and everybody else. You do put your pants on one leg at a time. It's just when you get your pants on, you make solid gold radio. And I think we're off to a start.
Wow.
That is just beyond compare this morning.
Wow,
I can't wait to
you.
See what happens next. Yeah.
Well, I took a little. I took a little bit too long to get to something that is on www.porkbusiness.com, and if you're looking for some last-second recipes for the big game on Sunday, she's got five beautiful pork recipes that you guys should check it out. I'm just saying.
Did you skip breakfast today? Is that what we got going on? You're just hungry right now.
Well. I read the recipe story this morning.
Okay.
They're delicious. I haven't eaten them, and I can tell that they're delicious. Mm-hmm. They've got bacon. Mm-hmm. There's bacon, Davis.
Yeah.
Bacon.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. Welcome to the free-for-all. Let's get this thing going. I'm Chip. That's Davis. We're both part of it. And we've got Randy Russell from the Russell Group. Randy, welcome to the free-for-all. How are you?
Chip, I'm doing great. Davis, nice to be with you. Solid gold radio. Is
yes,
that
sir.
What we're talking about?
Day
that's
in
right.
and day out, baby. That's our only
saying. Right.
That's a new one. That's a new one. But good for the Olympics. So let's get on with solid gold radio.
Perfect. Perfect. So we got the big game coming up on Sunday. What do you think of your new name, Commanders?
You know what? You can put lipstick on a pig, Chip, but it's still a pig, and you know we can call our team whatever it is, but it's mediocre at best.
You know that right there is a man with a solid analysis of what is going on with the Washington football team. No doubt, we've got Mark
I
Recker.
Hate the name. I hate the name. By the way,
really,
Chip. I can't stand it. But the team is frustrating as hell, and we're in a weak division. So let's just leave it at that.
Wow. Okay. See, I heard it and I was like, yeah, no, that kind of makes sense. That's where they would end up. I don't know. I don't know if I've got a strong feeling one way or the other on it. Let's get Mark Recker in here, Northeast Iowa farmer, biofuel supporter. How you doing, Mark?
Doing great, Chip. Doing great. I agree. I think the Commanders is a weak name. I didn't care for that, and I can't match Davis's solid gold radio comment necessarily, but it sounds like he might have a performance review coming up, looking for a raise, Chip.
I got to do what I can. It's all about the timing. I'm curious to either of you. You don't like the Commanders. Do you have a favorite? A suggestion, perhaps? Like what?
Well,
if we were going to go with the, if we were going to be the Commanders, we might as well just stayed with the Washington Football Club. I mean, I didn't like that either. But the fact is, it's kind of gotten in people's minds now. But again, we'll move on. We'll move on. But I got to tell you, in the end, it's the product on the field that matters, not the name.
Yes.
And the product has been subpar for a long time. Very, very disappointing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Maybe a name with a little more moxie. Just off the top of my head, Sass Badgers comes to my mind. The Washington Sass Badgers.
I didn't
just
know
thought.
Where this was going to go, but I knew it was
going to
involve.
Well, if you go back and look, the name Red Hogs was floated. Red Hogs.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
so
yeah.
That harkens back to an older era, if you
That's
remember the Hogs.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Yep.
So that
would
have been unique, and nobody else has a name like that. So that would have been interesting to put on. I'd like to see the – you know, what they come
the
up
logo.
For a uniform for that.
I want to see the mascot. Okay, guys, let's get to this. I think I want to start with the Competes Act, Randy. What's your take on it? What's in it? What is it? What is the Competes Act?
Yeah, Chip. So the Competes Act was really thought of as something where we needed, because of the disruptions in the supply chain, our dependence upon China for so many products, including our chip, primarily our chips that are used in so many different products today, that we needed to, one, improve our supply chain. Number two, invest pretty heavily in high tech related scientific research, and then finally put money in to further develop the chip technology producing here in the United States, so we're not so dependent on countries like China for those chips. And no better that we have to look at the price of used cars, price of a brand new car and truck to see what the impact of that is. So the Senate passed a $250 billion bill that addressed that, led by Chuck Schumer and others back in June. The House just passed their version, had more money in it last Friday. And I'm pretty optimistic that they're going to sit down, work out an agreement between the two and send it to the president for his signature.
Okay. It's another $350 million is the House bill, right? So does it end up someplace between the 250 in the Senate and 350? And what might be the biggest feature in it? The chips?
I think this, to me personally, Chip, the most important piece of this is the investment in U.S. production of chips and getting off of being so dependent on China for this critically important component that is so important in so many facets of our economy today.
Randy, aren't they going to have to loosen up some of the restrictions on manufacturing if we're going to bring chip manufacturing back into the U.S., some of the rules and regs?
Yes, we are, and we're going to have to foster an economic environment here where it makes sense to produce the chips. And that's partially what the COMPETES Act looks at, but it's more about funding and not about the overall climate. And you're right, Chip, the tax policy, the economic policy, all has to be, the regulatory policy, all has to be addressed if we're going to be able to compete against China.
Yeah. Mark, what's your take on this? Or Davis, go ahead, Davis.
Well, I was just going to throw in, you know, it does seem like on a host of issues from energies, you know, to shipping and stuff, we're spending a lot of time going hat in hand. You think of the oil. Well, we'll shut down the Keystone, but then we're going to go to Saudi and say, is there anything you can do on oil? We're going to release SBR. More. We're going to do all these things except for what would seem to make sense to me domestically to support a given industry. And that's a concern to me.
Yeah. No, Chip, Mark? I think that, I just think that COVID exposed a lot of weaknesses we have that, you know, over time we've relied so heavily. Well, we moved manufacturing overseas. We relied on just-in-time inventory here, and the COVID exposed all that. So if there's one thing that Congress should be able to do is be able to put together some legislation that would address a lot of these issues and address them in a good manner that's good legislation going forward. And it's another one of those things that's a lot of money, but hopefully the Senate passed it last summer, $250 billion, and it's another one of those things the Democrats, Joe Biden, can do to get some bipartisan legislation done. And I think the whole country would be served well if they got this done.
Yeah. Manufacturing back in the United States, Randy, do we have the workforce for it?
Well, Chip, we have a significant labor problem. I mean, right now we've got between 10 and 11 million private sector jobs that are unfilled. We've got unemployment that is 4% or less. So all the people we talk with throughout the value chain in agriculture and the food industry are all struggling to find workers. But let's also face it, I think these chip-related jobs, if we can get that industry going here in the United States, those are high-paying jobs, and I think would provide a little bit of a boost. But let's face it, that's a long-term investment. That's not going to get turned around overnight. And as you said, it's a multifaceted problem. But labor shortages, what's happening at the ports, the fact that we have 80,000 truck drivers jobs open all contribute to what Mark just talked about, and that is the supply chain disruption that we have and that is going to continue for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, yep. Okay, real quickly here, I want to get on this. The Freedom Convoy still got some blockades going on at the border with Canada. Mark, are you feeling any of the impact from this, or is it still pretty much business as usual?
Well, for me, it's still pretty much business as usual. But by what you read, the auto manufacturers are really getting worried about this. They found alternative routes across to Detroit, but it sounds like if this continues to go on, that there's going to be some real issues here. And I think the government in Canada, and you know, you talk about the governor of Michigan, they're working pretty hard to figure out how they can get a solution for this.
Yeah. Yeah, and the solution for this is, you know, when you listen to the truckers, is they're not going to be able to require a vaccination on those truckers if they want the economy to function as it has before. We'll have to, I can't believe we're up against a break already. Good grief. Okay, we've got Randy Russell, we've got Mark Recker, we've got Davis Michelson, me, Chip. And it is the free-for-all. We'll come back and talk a little bit more about the Freedom Convoy. And then let's get into the carbon markets a bit.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from ProFarmer.
Joining us now, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Beege, it feels a little familiar to the conversation that we had yesterday. We've got some gains going in the grain markets, but we've pulled back from the session highs. What's going on?
Well, yesterday's finishes were poor and finished lower on the day after hitting new contract highs in corn and soybeans. And so disappointing finishes, but didn't see follow through to the downside or sustained follow through to the downside and worked higher. Really, the soybean market pushed out earlier this morning to pretty strong gain. And like you mentioned, it backed off. But, you know, I think where we finished today is more critical than where we're trading here mid-morning after yesterday's price performance. You know, if we finish higher, then I think we'll probably make another run to the upside next week. If we finish lower, boy, that'd be 2 days in a row. And then it looks like maybe a extended pullback might be in order. So where we finish today, I think, will be critical, especially since it's the end of the week.
Well, yeah, and especially since we're still up over last Friday's close at this point. If they step back and say, okay, but we were higher on the week, and especially in the bean market. Take us over to the livestock trade. What you seeing there?
Well, pretty quiet, actually, in live cattle. Both sides have unchanged right now and just narrowly mixed. And you know, that was a market also that ran a new highs yesterday and then finished lower. So, you know, somewhat of a bounce back here, I suppose, if nothing else, the pause at the moment. The hog market, you know, key reversals in some of those contracts, especially the April contract yesterday. And now we're seeing follow through to the downside. So probably more price pressure to come near term in here, but we've had a heck of a run up.
Yeah, nervous time for the hog trade, no question. Thanks, Brian. We'll talk to you next week. Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. Our name says it all. AgriTalk. What more do you need to know?
Welcome back to AgriTalk and the free-for-all. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with us, and we are having a conversation with Randy Russell from the Russell Group, Mark Recker, Northeast Iowa farmer. Randy, we were talking a bit about the Freedom Convoy and the trucker revolt up in Canada. What's your take? How's it going to end?
Oh, I suspect, Chip, that we're going to it's not going to be just occurring at our northern border. I think you're going to see this turn into a brush fire here in the United States as well. There's already talk about a convoy that may be out in California. And it's talking about coming east and getting to Washington sometime in March. You know, as I witness what's going on in Canada, it seems to be pretty well organized. And you know what?
Yes.
If this isn't just about, I know it's been made out to be about the vaccine mandates and about the mask mandates. But, you know, right. I think there's a much bigger message here. It seems what's really motivating these truckers, which we all know are very independent, it's really more about freedom.
Freedom.
And as a and I know that's a novel concept, but it's really about one's freedom and the appropriate role of government versus the private sector and individual choice. And I think these truckers are sending a signal that they're tired of government overreach, and they are very concerned about the way of life as they know it in Canada and many people here in the United States, that these this government overreach has restricted our freedom to the point it's directly impacting our economy, our social fabric, and most of all, the American spirit.
Yes. Well said, Randy. Well said. And I think what's happening is the response that they're getting from the working class in Canada is being heard. It's being seen by truckers here in the United States. And I think that's I think the truckers may be thinking, hey, you know what? Let's go ahead and plan something here and get and draw some attention and get this keep the momentum going that they've got up in Canada. I think that's what's going to happen.
Well, following, as we know, what happened on January 6th, we saw a fence put up around the Capitol. I am suspecting that what we may very well see is a convoy parked on the 14th Street Bridge, which I remember many years ago. We had a bunch of tractors and trucks back there in the late 70s, as some of your listeners may recall. So I think this is going to catch fire here in the United States, and I fully expect we're going to see a convoy going west to east.
Davis, what's your take on this?
Well, and I had heard, too, that I'd read that GoFundMe had returned donations that had been given to the, you know, to the truckers.
Took the page
to help them
down.
Keep... Yeah, they took the page down and sent everybody their money back. Originally, the story was posted that that GoFundMe was just going to find some sort of charity and disperse it as they saw fit. And I think since then they've reversed that position and just refunded everyone's money. But that almost sort of gives it a red badge of courage. And when Randy's talking about the U.S. maybe looking at it and saying, hey, wow, yeah, they're this is really a thing. You know, that sort of red badge of courage is just fuel for the fire here in my mind.
Yeah.
Yeah, Mark? Chip, you know, if I can jump in here, you know, according to what I've been reading, 90% of truckers in Canada are vaccinated.
Yeah.
Which is a big number. I mean, so it's not like there's 75 of these truckers that are at the border that are doing this. So the huge, and Canada's had, you know, these mandates in place, and Canada's done a great job of managing COVID, actually. 80% of their country's vaccinated compared to 64% of the United States. So we all want to get beyond COVID. We just do, we're all in the same place. Mm-hmm. And the way you do that is you get vaccinated. It's just, you know, you see states in the United States, they're limiting ending mask mandates and so forth because everybody's ready. And the numbers are showing us we can do that. But ultimately, we don't get past COVID if we don't get vaccinated to a large degree. When my kids and your kids go to public school, Chip, they have to get vaccinated. They just have to. Well, so mandates like this, it's not uncommon. It's not like we've not dealt with this before. But what we're fighting here, and the reason we're having to face mandates is because, and they didn't come out in the United States until last summer because of all the misinformation and disinformation that's going around about the vaccine. And that's part of what we're fighting here too. And I agree with, you know, the comment that there's other things going on besides vaccine. There's government, anti-government sentiment too, but we all want to get COVID behind us and you know, let's get it done.
We all want to get COVID behind us.
And it takes a collective effort to do it.
Yeah, and the vaccine issue, we've talked about it on the show before. I'm vaccinated because I decided to be vaccinated. But if someone out there has decided I'm not going to be vaccinated, I've got no problem with that. I really don't.
Chip, jumping in on that point,
yeah.
I am not vaccinated. And I've done my homework on it, and I am not comfortable getting vaccinated. But I also support people's decision to get vaccinated if they choose to do that. I just don't want the government telling me that I have to get vaccinated.
Right, right.
And it's very clear from the data that that those that are vaccinated and boosted versus those that aren't vaccinated, the probability of transmission is the same for both categories. Both categories. That's what the data shows. That's CDC data. And all I'm saying is I don't want the government to tell me I have to be vaccinated. Period. Right.
I get that. The government didn't tell me. The government didn't tell me that I needed to be vaccinated.
Let me tell you what happened.
I made that choice on my own with talking with the family.
Right. And I respect that. And that's between you and your family and your doctor, and you come to your own conclusion. But I just don't want the government to tell me I have to do it.
Right.
And I don't want the government to tell me that my kids have to have it to go to school. We don't know what the long-term implications of that vaccine is.
Yep. Yep.
And Chip, the other side of this is the goal for a lot of this should be, let's keep hospitalizations down, you know, and he's right that the transmissibility is there, even if you're vaccinated, but the vaccinated don't go to the hospital nearly as often. And when you have people in the hospital, Chip, then you can't do the other procedures and other things the hospital needs to do.
Yeah. And that was the deciding factor for me. I mean, those of you that know me out there know that I have, that I might be carrying a few extra pounds around. And that is one of the things that made it more likely that if you ended up with COVID, that you would end up in the hospital, that you might end up on a respirator. And that scared the crap out of me. And if there was any way that I could prevent that or lower the odds of that happening, I was going to do it.
And Chip, I certainly respect that right for you to make that, or Mike to make that, or Davis to make that decision. I think it's also important to point out that a third of the hospitalizations related to COVID, a third of those were in for other procedures that they happened to test positive.
Right.
I think that's an important data
that
point.
That happens
as well.
so often. And then, you know, the false positives that are out there on the tests and everything, the whole country, I don't care if it's Republican or Democrat, the whole country is sick and tired of the confusing information that is coming from the CDC, the sick and tired of the confusing information that's coming from Fauci. That's why you're seeing some of the Democrats back away from all of this right now. It just, and I rarely break out the R word and the D word on this show. I don't do that very often. But in this case, Republicans and Democrats are thinking the same on it. They're sick and tired of it. Let's get past it.
Yeah, I agree, Chip.
If I could throw in, I like Randy, have chosen not to be vaccinated. However, I have taken steps to do the very best that I can to maintain my own personal health. I've, you know, sort of improved the sorts of things that I eat, you know, try to get a workout in every once in a while. I'm taking, you know, extra vitamin D and extra vitamin supplements and things. And I think that's part of a responsibility that goes along with that decision. Okay, I'm not going to be vaccinated, but I also don't want to wind up being some kind of freaky super spreader, too, at the same time. There is that level of responsibility. I agree with Mark.
You make a great point. And the other thing is that, you know, there are people that have comorbidity factors that are important to take into account.
Yes.
And, you know, and the data shows that as well. So that's a different category. But we all have a responsibility, not just for COVID, very frankly, but for all other kinds of reasons to take care of our health.
If I've got the flu, I'm not going to get out and be around a bunch of people either. I never did that.
Same deal.
And if you want to really protect yourself, just like Davis said, you take zinc, you take vitamin D, and I've been loading up on that for, you know, 2 years.
Me too.
Wow.
And I feel fantastic, I'll tell you that.
Well, at least you guys are self-medicating with zinc and vitamin D and not something else.
Among others.
I appreciate that. Wow. Wow. All valid points. And so much of what we just talked about is the conversation that's happening at the trucker protests up in Canada. I agree with Randy that I think that there's going to be some protest rallies. I don't know exactly what we're going to call them, but I think they're going to happen in the United States. And this the conversation that we just had is going to be a major part of it. I just
what we call them is going to depend on which people, news outlet you follow.
I just hope that people can be civil in the conversation, like we are.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. If you've made the decision not to be vaccinated, that's fine. But just understand why some people have made the decision, and quit calling them sheeple, and quit calling names, and quit calling. It's disrespectful, and it does nothing to get us what we all want, and that is to be past it.
If the world is your oyster, we've got pearls of wisdom on AgriTalk.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. Glad that you are with us this morning. Big thank you to Randy, to Mark, and to Davis for the conversation that we just had, because it's an important conversation, and it's one that I don't know if you can tune in anywhere else and find the kind of conversation that we just had. Really good stuff. Randy Russell, the Russell Group, Mark Recker, farmer here in Iowa, and you guys know Davis. Okay.
Hello.
Randy, I want to go back to you to start this one off. Give us the latest on Russia-Ukraine and what you think is going to happen.
Well, Chip, let's face it. The Russians now have about 130,000 troops stationed on the eastern border of the Ukraine. And obviously, they also have troops in Belarus, which is an ally. And so we'll have to watch this very, very closely. Clearly, the White House is trying to prepare people for a potential invasion. I remain skeptical whether that's actually going to happen or not. I'm not exactly sure that will happen. And I will say a couple of other things. You look at the eastern provinces of the Ukraine, and most of those have very strong relationships ethnically, culturally, long-standing ties with Russia. Also, we saw Crimea down in the south that was annexed in 2014. So that's another important data point. And then finally, I just want to make one other point. Only 30% of Americans support any kind of military action if the Russians do invade the Ukraine. Yeah. 30%. So it's going to be very interesting to watch what Germany does and what our European allies do if indeed there is an invasion, given the dependence that Germany and Europe have on natural gas from Russia, and how tied their economy is to the Russian economy as well.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the potential impact on the wheat market. It's the potential impact on the corn market. But it's the impact on the energy market, Mark, that that I'm looking at and saying, man, Iowa farmers and farmers all over the country are feeling some of the stress that's happening over in Russia, Ukraine.
Watching it every day, you know, waiting on pins and needles to find out what's going to happen. We see it reflected in the markets every day. And I'm like Randy, I don't think this is going to go to war, because he mentioned the American people's appetite. I don't think the Russian people have an appetite for a war either when it comes down to it. So I'm hoping that that sentiment draws things back to something more peaceful.
Hmm. And it does seem like there's such a wide range of views on this, that all the way from the sky is falling, our hair is on fire, we've got to do something, get some sanctions put together, to you know, Zelensky himself, the leader of Ukraine, seems very unaffected by the whole thing. He downplays it. I don't know who to believe.
Yeah, it's all very interesting, no doubt. Okay, let's move on to the carbon markets here, because one of the things that's being talked about out there so much is Secretary Vilsack's comments regarding that new revenue stream for the ag sector. We talked with the CEO from Indigo Ag this week on the show. Mark, he indicated that it's time to move on to the second stage of the carbon markets, and they are starting to think that carbon might be worth somewhere in the range of 90 to 120 bucks a ton. Now, if the payments start looking like that, all of a sudden the interest in changing production practices to capture some of those carbon payments is going to go through the roof, isn't it?
It is, and that's what a lot of us out here, and I've been attending meetings on this winter, Chip, along with many others, and we don't know what to expect. with this. We've been hearing some, you know, low numbers that really aren't that exciting. But when you're talking values like that, that's going to garner a lot of interest. But there's still so many unknowns with the carbon market that farmers are going to have to learn about it, because it's coming whether we like it or not.
Right, right. The climate-friendly farming practices that that USDA is looking to encourage, Randy, can they use the money from the CCC to do that?
Chip, this question comes up a lot about whether or not the Commodity Credit Corporation has the authority to do this. You know, I'm not a lawyer. I tell people I was such a bad economist, I had to become a lobbyist. But I've spent a lot of time working with the Commodity Credit Corporation. I personally believe they do have the authority to do it. And I fully support this billion-dollar effort that Secretary Vilsack and Undersecretary Bonney announced earlier in the week. And the reason is that we've got to find out, not just in the Midwest, but around the country, what's workable, what is going to work, what can scale up in terms of carbon capturing and carbon reduction, but also on methane capturing and methane reduction from the livestock sector's perspective. And so this allows us to run demonstration projects to find out around the country, different regions, different commodities, different type producers, what's going to work and what doesn't. But ultimately, Chip, what's going to drive this is what you guys just talked about. And that is one thing or the other is going to happen. Either the retailers and others in the value chain are going to push these costs down on producers, because that's what their investors and that's what some consumers are asking for, more environmentally friendly produced products. Or we're going to change the value proposition around on this and allow this to be a revenue generator for production agriculture by generating carbon credits and methane credits, reduction credits as we go forward. And it's going to be one or the other.
Right,
and the private sector is coming whether the government moves on this or not. So I fully support efforts to try to generate revenue out of the private sector for farmers for this purpose.
Yeah, yep. At some point, we're going to have a conversation about what the balance sheet on this carbon looks like and whether or not it's a good idea for agriculture to be giving up claim to the carbon sequestration. Mm-hmm. Because consumers that are buying food are going to be looking for the same answers from their food producers as they are from their widget producers. What are you doing? Well, if you sell that credit, if you sell what you've done to the widget producer, can you even lay claim to it anymore? Questions that are still out there that we need to answer.
Yeah.
Holy smokes, we are out of time. Wow. Randy, thank you so much, buddy. Appreciate your time.
Chip, pleasure to be with you and Davis and Mark. Have a great weekend.
All right, and you bet. You too. Mark, go Cyclones, buddy.
Hey, go Bengals, Chip.
All right, come back this afternoon.